It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. Broadcasting from Signal Hill, overlooking downtown Kodiak, where it's 38 degrees right now. They're saying snow is likely, then rain. The rain could be heavy at times today, high near 42. Southeast wind to 25 miles per hour could gust as high as 40. Chance of precipitation is 100%. And you might get a little snow today, but less than 1 inch. For tonight, rain, heavy at times, low around 36. Southeast wind to 40 knots, will gust as high as 55. Chance of precipitation, 110%. New amounts of whatever comes down tonight, between 1 and 2 inches possible. Coming up on the Midday News, how one hospitality business is adapting in Fairbanks. And KDLL's reporter remembers Jim Fisher.
President-elect Joe Biden now has his first of two doses of the Pfizer COVID vaccine, taking the shot on live TV from a hospital in Newark, Delaware. He praised the Trump administration's vaccine mobilization effort.
The administration deserves some credit getting this off the ground with Operation Warp Speed.
He urged Americans to get the vaccine as soon as it's available. The Vatican says that the COVID vaccines are morally acceptable, even if they derive from aborted fetuses. NPR Sylvia Poggioli reports.
The Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith said that, yes, use of vaccines against COVID-19 made from cell lines drawn from tissue obtained from aborted fetuses is morally acceptable. But it added that does not legitimize, even indirectly, the practice of abortion. The statement went on to say that along with the duty to protect one's health, there is also the duty to pursue the common good, especially to protect the weakest and most exposed. The congregation also said it's a moral imperative for pharmaceutical industries, governments, and international organizations to ensure that vaccines are made easily accessible to the poorest countries. Sylvia Poggioli, NPR News, Rome.
Outgoing Attorney General William Barr told reporters today he sees no evidence of the kind of outcome-changing voter fraud that President Trump has alleged, and he's not appointing a special counsel to probe Hunter Biden. NPR's Ryan Lucas reports.
President-elect Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, is currently under federal investigation for possible tax crimes. Barr says he sees no need to appoint a special counsel to lead that effort going forward.
I think that it's being handled responsibly and professionally currently within the department. And to this point, I have not seen a reason to appoint a special counsel, and I have no plan to do so before I leave.
He also says he has no plans to appoint a special counsel to investigate Trump's claims of widespread election fraud, an idea the president has reportedly raised with advisors. Barr has previously stated the Justice Department found no evidence of systemic fraud, and he's standing by that assessment now. Ryan Lucas, NPR News, Washington.
Also, unlike the president, Barr believes the master of a cyber attack on government networks was Russia. The nation's former top cybersecurity official, Christopher Krebs, tells NPR that diagnosing the intrusion is a massive undertaking.
These actors moved like ghosts, effectively, and didn't leave a lot of trails. And there was nothing really to hunt on. More things will make sense. But again, you know, there are a set of capabilities that we need in the U.S. government that we just don't have.
Krebs also believes that Russia launched that attack. Wall Street at the close, the Dow was up 36 points, the Nasdaq down 13. This is NPR News in Washington.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
Alaska's first steps into statehood were shaped by its inaugural legislative class, a group of senators and House representatives who set the young government on its course 6 decades ago. One of those first legislators, James Fisher, played an equally prominent role in the shaping of the Kenai Peninsula. Jim died of COVID-19 last month at his home at Heritage Place in Soldotna. He was 93. Sabine Pooks in Kenai has more.
Those who knew Jim remember him for his deep-rooted political involvement and unflinching advocacy for local people and causes, and his love for his kids, grandkids, and great-grandkids. Here's daughter Sally Tachik of Soldotna.
If my dad ran the world, everybody would have a place to sleep and food to eat.
Jim was born in Ohio and grew up in Texas. He spent several years in Asia with the Army and Marines and came to Anchorage in 1955, following the spirit of adventure and the legacy of his great-grandfather, who had sought gold in the Klondike. He became involved in Operation Statehood and was elected to the first Alaska legislature in 1959, one of 8 representatives from Anchorage. The legislature was majority Democrat at the time. Jim was a loyal Democrat his entire life. Michelle Vasquez remembers meeting him at a District 30 Democratic Party meeting years later.
And he said he was Jim Fisher, and he was the oldest living Roosevelt Democrat on the Kenai Peninsula. I was like enamored from that moment. I said, I've got to get to know this guy.
Jim married his wife, Helen, in 1960. Shortly after, he lost re-election to the state house and the family moved down to the peninsula, where they raised Tachik and their son, Bruce, in Soldotna, and then Kenai. That's where Jim opened his law practice. He recruited Jim Hornaday to be his partner.
Once he set a goal, he generally accomplished it. I was clerking for the court up in Anchorage, and he literally dug me out of the courthouse and offered me a partnership in his firm down on the Kenai Peninsula.
Hornaday didn't know him then. The two ended up practicing together for over a decade.
We basically made legal services available in areas where it hadn't been available. He was the first practitioner in Kenai, and then I think we opened the first office in Homer.
Jim and Helen also spent several years in Juneau. There, they adopted Corey Mann, then a teenager, who they helped guide through school. The theme for Jim was always service. He founded the Kenai Bar Society and was a representative to the USDA during the Carter administration. He was deeply involved with local causes and was famously committed to the Kenai Peninsula Food Bank, where he was inducted into the first Hall of Fame. Jim always kept up to date with politics. Tachik says when she was going through his things, she found receipts from campaigns he had donated to out east. He supported candidates he believed in all over the country. Vasquez says he especially wanted to support women who ran for office. He supported the League of Women Voters and worked hard to overturn SB 21, a referendum on tax cuts for Alaska oil companies. Hornaday, who became a lifelong friend, says they would have friendly debates from the other side of the aisle.
Oh yeah, we'd go round and round on the politics.
Jim's patronage extended into the realm of music. Once Helen died, he dove into the peninsula's live music scene, attending open mic nights and shows, usually multiple times in one night. Some of his favorites were Soldotna musicians Sue Biggs and Jack Will. Here's Biggs.
Jim, being the lawyer that he was, in his pocket he had a little notepad and a pen, but he'd pull it out and he would write down songs that he liked. And then if we came back another Friday or Saturday, and he would be there having his soup. He always liked to have a bowl of soup. And he would pull out his little notepad, and he'd say, how about that, you know, put out the cat or something like that. And so he started having a list of songs that he liked of ours.
He kept it up when he moved into Heritage Place, Central Peninsula Hospital's long-term living facility. Even in his old age, he was determined to get to know the people around him, Tachik says.
And when he would talk to you, he wanted to know about you. He's quizzed all of his CNAs and nurses about how many kids do you have, and so what is your daughter studying in college?
COVID-19 swept through Heritage Place in November. Fisher tested positive for the virus and died 4 days later, November 21st. The facility was buttoned up to prevent the spread of coronavirus. Bruce says the last time they visited face-to-face was in September.
That's the saddest thing I've ever had to do is when we Zoomed and he was in the emergency room. And you can tell he's just gasping for air. And his eyes were bugged out a little bit. And then the doctor says, is there anything you want to say to your son? Come get me. Come get me. God, just tore me up.
Before Jim died, Biggs and Will played some of his favorite songs over FaceTime. Like always, he did his best to sing along, Big says.
You could tell, like, his lips were kind of moving, even though, you know, he wasn't really all there. But the, you could tell he was singing. I could hear him. Yeah, I could tell he was singing along. We were singing all his favorite songs that he loved to sing along with us.
They even changed the words to an old folk tune he liked for his 80th birthday. Here's part of The Lawyer Song by Sue Biggs and Jack Will. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Thank you, Sabine. The Trump administration is planning to auction off drilling rights for about 1 million acres of federal land in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge next month. But how much oil is actually there? Alaska Public Media's Tegan Hanlon reports that geologists say rock formations, oil seeps, and decades-old seismic data seem promising, but big questions still remain.
Supporters of drilling in the refuge's coastal plain in northeast Alaska often point to its oil potential as a reason to develop the remote stretch of land. President Donald Trump has described it as
one of the great sites of energy in the world.
But what the federal government actually knows about the oil underneath the coastal plain is limited.
We don't know very much about this area.
Dave Hausnecht is a senior research geologist at the U.S. Geological Survey and an expert on the coastal plain.
There are a lot of uncertainties that are difficult to quantify in the absence of better quality data of one sort or another.
There are likely multiple factors that companies will consider before bidding in the upcoming lease sale. There's the lawsuits, the money, the changing administration, and, of course, how much oil they think they could pump out of the ground. The last USGS assessment from more than 2 decades ago showed anywhere from about 4 billion barrels of technically recoverable oil to about 12 billion barrels under the federal land in the coastal plain. Hausnecht says that's a whole lot of oil, but also a wide range. And he says that's because of two main uncertainties.
The seismic data that we have are quite old, low resolution, and a sparse grid. So there's a great distance between adjacent seismic lines compared to elsewhere in the North Slope.
Seismic surveys are used to help find pockets of oil using sound waves, and the most recent seismic data from the coastal plain is from the 1980s. Hausnecht says technology has come a long way since then. And he says what's also missing from the USGS assessment is any data from actual wells that have been drilled in the refuge in search of oil. That's because there's been just one exploratory well drilled in the coastal plain back in the mid-1980s on Alaska Native land. But the results of that well are a closely guarded secret.
I signed a confidentiality agreement, and it didn't have a date of an end date on it.
Mark Myers, a geologist and former commissioner of the Alaska Department of Natural Resources, is one of the few people who have seen the test well results.
So I can't comment on it in terms of what I saw, even though it was a lot of years ago.
While Myers says he can't talk about the well, a New York Times investigation did suggest that the results were not promising. But Hausnecht says the companies with the well data still have critical knowledge. USGS interpreted the old seismic data to show that most of the oil is likely in the western part of the coastal plain, and they said the other side didn't appear to have the right conditions to hold a lot of petroleum. Hausnecht says, however, those companies with the data would know a lot more about the rocks underground on the eastern side of the refuge and their potential.
Whether that source rock is present or absent, whether that reservoir rock is present or absent, is huge.
Meyer says he thinks one big selling point for oil companies is the fact that the coastal plain is on shore, making it cheaper to access than offshore prospects. And, he says, there just aren't a lot of opportunities for companies to get in early on a potentially massive oil find.
I would say ANWR falls in that high risk, high potential. Not high risk of oil, but high risk of execution. And when you put it all together, will that attract somebody? I think it will.
When Meyer says high risk of execution, he means there is a whole lot of opposition to drilling in the refuge that could derail a company's project. In Anchorage, I'm Tegan Hanlon.
The pandemic has been tough on hospitality businesses, forcing many to close or change. A popular Fairbanks area restaurant and bar is doing both in an effort to survive long term. KUAC's Dan Bros has this report.
The Silver Gulch Restaurant and Brewery is located about 10 miles north of Fairbanks in the tiny, historic mining community of Fox. It's a destination place to eat and drink and would routinely be packed on weekend nights, but has been closed due to the pandemic. While that's not good for short-term viability, Silver Gulch co-founder and president Glenn Brady says it is providing an opportunity to rethink how they do business.
We'd been struggling with kind of how to restructure a service model away from a more full-service model into something more casual. And COVID came along and really defined the boundaries, if you will, as to what that new service model is going to look like.
Brady says the new Silver Gulch experience is going to be shaped by the social changes precipitated by the pandemic.
We're fleshing that out now, but it's come down to effectively a counter service, slightly more do-it-yourself, distancing staff from customers in ways that don't necessarily fit into traditional service models.
Brady maintains even after COVID-19 vaccination is widespread and virus cases diminish, the pandemic will continue to affect hospitality businesses.
When people walk into a place that's crowded now, they're going to think differently. That experience will not be soon forgotten.
Almost every industry on the planet is going to feel the impacts of COVID-19 for extremely long time, possibly in perpetuity.
That's University of Alaska Anchorage, Alaska Small Business Development Center Executive Director John Bittner. During a recent presentation to the Fairbanks Economic Development Corporation, Bittner said that fundamental shift will affect how restaurants and bars operate post-pandemic.
I think this is going to push a lot of them to change their business model away from just strictly in-person dining. A lot of them are recognizing that there is an opportunity, if they can survive what's coming, to expand their operations and offerings as well.
Bittner says there may be some industry regulatory changes, particularly related to takeout alcohol. Silver Gulch's Brady has not set a date for when the Fox operation will reopen, saying it hinges on when the pandemic slows, likely in the late spring. Silver Gulch also has a restaurant and bar at the Anchorage Airport, an operation Brady says is considered in support of an essential service and has been allowed to operate through the pandemic.
Which has been the thing that has helped us weather this.
Brady says it also helps that he and Silver Gulch's co-founder are both engineers and have had projects to work on during the pandemic, opportunity he acknowledges most fellow hospitality industry business owners don't have. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
On Saturday, the Kodiak Emergency Operations Center reported 12 new cases of COVID-19 for the Kodiak Island Borough. One new case was tested on the 9th. One case was tested on the 15th. Six cases were tested on the 17th. And four cases were tested on the 18th. Three of these cases were travel-related. The rest were close contacts or community transmission. Sadly, one new death has also been reported for the Kodiak community. This brings the current case count associated with the Kodiak Island Borough to 783. 158 cases are classified as active locally. To date, there have been a total number of 33 local hospitalizations and five deaths associated with COVID-19. Six patients are currently hospitalized in Kodiak.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch, a one-stop shop for COVID relief funds. More on Swampsea's Forward program after this.
Have fish in the freezer? Have it on the table in minutes with Azmi's new Cook It Frozen and hundreds of other recipes at WildAlaskaSeafood.com.
One of the most frustrating things coming out of COVID-19 for fishermen and coastal businesses is how to apply for the many relief fund options available or finding someone who can answer questions. Help is one click or phone call away for those who live in the Southwest Alaska region.
Super easy. You go to one screen, one website, and everything that's available comes up and it shows you what you're eligible for, what you might be eligible for, and what you're not eligible for.
Shirley Marquard is Executive Director of the Southwest Alaska Municipal Conference, which serves regional boroughs of the Aleutian Pribilofs, Bristol Bay, Kodiak, and the Lakin Peninsula. Swamsea received relief funds to create a free online portal called Forward. Marquardt calls it a one-stop shop for help.
It's taking the mystery out of how to get help and just shows you right there, look at all these things that are available. Which ones fit you? You want to apply? Click apply.
What's best about the Forward program is that a friendly voice will answer or return every phone call. That's the job of Swamsea's Carrie Skaggs.
I respond as quickly as I can because people are nervous, they're scared, they're wondering what their future's going to look like, and I think it makes a difference for them to hear a voice that seems to care.
The virus has canceled face-to-face gatherings and forced the process to be handled online. It's a problem that's drawn attention again to the frustrations about limited broadband access for many rural regions.
They feel disconnected and cut off as it is, and so when they get a live person on the phone and hear a voice that will listen to their needs, it does bring some comfort, even if I can't always solve their problem.
Find answers by emailing forward@swamsea.org and find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 21st day of December, the year 2020, and it's the winter solstice. Shortest day of the year, longest night. Sun rose today at 9:53 a.m. It will set again at 4:24 this afternoon. That will give us 6 hours and 31 minutes of precious daylight hours, and it's just going to be more after this. That is neither a loss nor a gain. Looking at our local district tides, we have a low tide coming up at 1:02 this afternoon. That will be a 3.46-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 6:42 this evening of 6.54 feet. Our low tide for the middle of the night will be at 1:12 a.m. at 1.62 feet, and our high tide tomorrow morning on the east side will be at 8:10 a.m., a 7.24-foot tide. Over on the west side, and these are Uganic Pass tides, you have a low tide coming up at 1:42 this afternoon of 4.9 feet, followed by a high tide at 7:26 this evening of 11.22 feet, 11.22, followed by a low tide at 1:53 a.m. of 3.41 feet, and your high tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will be at 8:31 a.m. of 12.56 feet. 38 degrees here in Kodiak right now. They're still saying it might snow, but they're calling for heavy rain as well with a high near 42 today. Southeast wind could gust as high as 40 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 100%. For tonight, look for more rain. It could be heavy at times overnight tonight as well. Low around 36 with southeast wind to 40 miles per hour with gusts as high as 55 miles per hour tonight. Chance of precipitation again, 100%. And we're looking at between 1 to 2 inches of precipitation, whatever may come down tonight. For tomorrow, rain is likely mainly before 3 p.m. Cloudy skies tomorrow with a high near 41. Southeast wind to 20 miles per hour should turn to the northwest and come down to 10 miles per hour tomorrow afternoon. But winds could gust as high as 25 miles per hour. Mariners, here is your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast. including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. Settle back in your easy chair. It's a long one. A 1,002 millibar low near Cordova will dissipate late Monday morning. A strong front will enter the western Gulf Monday afternoon and move inland along the north Gulf Coast by Tuesday afternoon. A 966 millibar low will form along the front over the North Pacific Monday evening and move over Kodiak Island by Tuesday morning, then over to the Alaska Peninsula by Tuesday evening. A 970 millibar low will develop 300 nautical miles south of Sitkanak Tuesday morning, and it will move to 150 nautical miles southeast of Kodiak City and go to 961 millibars by Tuesday evening, and then hover over the Barren Islands at 970 millibars by Wednesday morning. Well, the end of that story is, for Marmot Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side offshore, storm warning tonight. South winds to 30 knots right now. We'll go to the southeast and come up to 45 knots this afternoon. Seas building to 19 feet this afternoon. For tonight, look for southeast winds to 50 knots, 5-0, seas to 26 feet. For tomorrow, south winds to 30 knots. We'll go turn to the west, seas to 25 feet tomorrow. But for Tuesday night, look for southwest wind to 40 knots and seas to 20 feet off our east side offshore. Over on the west side, gale warning tonight, southeast winds to 30 knots right now and seas to 7 feet. For tonight, look for east winds to 40 knots, seas building to 10 feet in the Shelikof. For tomorrow, south winds to 25 knots will become west 15 knots tomorrow afternoon. Seas to 7 feet should subside to 3 feet tomorrow afternoon. And for tomorrow night in the Shelikof, west wind to 35 knots and seas to 6 feet. Inside waters, Chiniac and Marmot Bays have gale warnings for tonight. South wind to 30 knots, seas to 5 feet, building to 12 feet in the afternoon at Chiniac and Marmot Bays. For tonight, southeast wind to 45 knots in Marmot Bay, seas to 20 feet. Southeast wind to 45 knots in Chiniac Bay, seas to 18 feet. For tomorrow, south wind to 25 knots should turn to the northwest 15 tomorrow afternoon, seas coming down to 5 feet tomorrow in Chiniac and Marmot Bays. Well, the KMXT duo, the dynamic duo of Dylan and Amelia, will be doing more vinyl tomorrow morning as well, starting at 9 a.m., 9-ish. And they're still looking for a Charlie Brown Christmas on vinyl. If you have a Charlie Brown Christmas sitting there in your living room, you know it's over there, and you happen to be coming to town anyway, you could throw it in the car, maybe bring it by the station and leave it on the table outside. The Monk's Rock Christmas Choir is offering Call a Carol. Even though they can't really go around and carol in person, they're offering live Christmas carol sung over the phone. And what you do is you text them to tell them when you'd like them to call you and sing to you. And what you need to do is you need to text them at one of these two numbers, 512-9948 or 539-8877, and leave a text message as to when you want them to call you back. Then just put it on speakerphone, and whoever's there might be 15 people, there might just be the one person there cleaning up, will sing you Christmas carols for you and your family. Kodiak City Council will be holding a meeting on Tuesday. That's tomorrow, December 22nd. The meeting will begin at 12 p.m. It will be held virtually. Elected officials will be participating via audio or video conferencing, maybe a few in person. Attendance for the meeting will mean no in-person meeting. However, the meeting will be web-streamed, and the web-streaming link and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. Just search City of Kodiak. And for those who wish to request printed meeting materials, call the clerk at 486-8636. St. James the Fisherman is having their mini quilt show and sale, but it's online. And what you need to do is search for Kodiak Bear Paw Quilters. That's Kodiak Bear Paw Quilters. And it should take you to their website, and you'll see a nice gallery of different mini quilts, and then you can just call them up and purchase them that way. The city and borough buildings will be closed to the public in the afternoons between today and Thursday, and closed all day on Friday. If you can handle any business online or by phone, you are encouraged to do so.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day. Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the Midday Report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.